Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. This morning in this first part of the show, we'll be talking about the Big Read. Now, this is a project that's now going on in more than 120 communities across the United States in the first half of this year. This is an initiative of the National Endowment for the Arts, and the idea is encouraging people to read literature and do that by providing citizens in particular communities the opportunity to read and discuss a single book. And in a lot of places, they've picked particular books and they have a lot of events going on in connection with that. Here in Champaign-Urbana, people are reading Tolstoy's novella, The Death of Ivan Illich. And this morning, in this part of the show, we'll talk a little bit about the writing, about Tolstoy, about the Big Read. And we have here in the studio two guests to help us do that. Michael Denner is Assistant Professor of Russian Studies at Stetson University. He is also editor of the Tolstoy Studies Journal and director of the University Honors Program there at Stetson. And Harriet Murov, she's professor in the Department of Slavic Languages and Literatures here at the University of Illinois and is interested in things like Russian culture, film, theater, and 19th century literature. She's also teaching a course on the novel this spring here at the University of Illinois. There will be a number of events going on here in connection with the Big Read in Champaign-Urbana. One in particular I want to mention is that Michael Denner will be giving a talk tonight at 7 o'clock at the Champaign Public Library on the book. And anyone, I'm sure, who is interested in attending should feel welcome to stop by. There are other things that are happening too, and the website for the Big Read, and the URL is a little long, so I would suggest probably the easiest thing to do if you have internet access is to type into your web browser Champaign-Urbana Big Read 2008, and you'll get there, and you can see some of the various things that are going on. And also, just before we start here, I do want to mention that there are a number of organizations, entities, departments here in Champaign-Urbana that are involved in making this thing happen here, the Big Read Champaign-Urbana, and they include the Department of Slavic Languages and Literatures, the Russian, East European, and Eurasian Center, the School of Literatures, Cultures, and Linguistics, also the public libraries in Champaign and Urbana. So you can go into the website and you find out what's going on. You can go out and read the book, and here this morning we'll talk a little bit about it. Questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Well, thank you both very much for being here. We appreciate it. We were just talking here a little bit about how it is that this project is organized, and it's my understanding that the folks at the NEA essentially suggested a number of books that communities might want to read, covering a fairly wide range of subject matter and styles of writing and periods, and this novella by Tolstoy was one of them. What do you think about the selection of this particular book? There might have been some other things on there that people would have said, okay, well, we'll do that. Or I'm wondering, in fact, how many people would just be frightened off by Tolstoy in the first place because they've looked at War and Peace or something like that, and they've said, well, I can't do that. One of the nice things about this novella is that it's relatively short. You can take it on in a couple of hours. What do you think about the choice of this particular writer?
Well, I think it's to Dana Joy's credit that he's interested in having Americans read non-English language literature, and to his credit that Russian literature has always been an interest and a love of his. I understand that Crime and Punishment was another possible selection, but given that it's 800 pages in length, that somehow other people persuaded him that it wouldn't be the best choice. Only four communities chose The Death of Ivan Illich out of the 120 or so.
Well, I have to admit that I've never read any Tolstoy before this and was very taken with this story and with the quality of the writing and with the themes that are taken up. And it makes me want to go and read more, which I guess that's part of the idea. Let me ask Michael Denner, as somebody who is a specialist in this man and his writing, for someone who had never read any Tolstoy, what would you, in 25 words or less, what can you say about? Well, okay, you don't have to do it like that. Briefly, what could you say about him? About his writing, about his use of language?
That's a tall chore. It's pretty typical to divide Tolstoy's career in half, post and pre-crisis. Tolstoy had, I think, what we would call today a nervous breakdown or a spiritual revolt in the mid-1870s. So the second half of his life's work, this is a guy who lived a very long time. Mm-hmm. He lived from 1828 to 1910, basically actively published from 1850 till the year of his death. We're talking about a long, long career here. But the last half of his career, I actually think that Death of Ivan Ilyich is quite typical of that second half of his life, when he really took on, these big issues like life and death, and politics and religion. Tolstoy had a really fascinating career in the second half of his life. We usually think of Tolstoy as the author of War and Peace and Anna Karenina, but during his lifetime, he was far, far more well known for his religious and political writings and his very public stances about politics and religion and the Russian Orthodox Church and war. He was what we would call today moral authority. And Russians used to joke in the second half of the 19th century that there were two czars, Nicholas and Tolstoy. And that's actually true, Tolstoy wielded an enormous moral authority, not just over Russia, but over the entire world. He had followers, in the United States and Canada and Ukraine and Africa and Asia, you name it. I think that this particular book is it's a challenging book, especially for Americans. Not many Americans really reach for a book that's the first word of the title, which is death, and the most famous line of which is, ladies and gentlemen, Ivan Ilyich is dead. We tend to shy away from these things. And I don't really want to further any stereotypes about Russian literature, but this book is totally Russian in its attempt to grapple with big thorny problems and say important things about religion and philosophy and about how it is that we lead our lives.
Yeah.
Well, I could add that Tolstoy also was a master not only of the big thorny political, religious, theological issues, but a master of how we live in our bodies. In this book, we live in our body in pain, but in mm-hmm. Anna Karenina and War and Peace, Tolstoy knows what it's like to have a bad hair day. I mean, he has young women standing in front of the mirror, tugging at their dresses, hoping that their corsage looks good. So he knows what that experience is like, mm-hmm. and he can convey it.
That's one of the things that I think that I have read a lot about him and about his writing is he said he had a tremendous eye for detail in describing people, places, things, the feeling of the place and what's going on, even to the point of describing the sounds that people are surrounded with in very, very striking and close detail so that when you read it, you can see it, see what it is that he's writing about.
Absolutely. I mean, one of my favorite things to point out to students is how he creates a world on that Morocco leather couch where Ivan Ilyich lies dying. That couch becomes his world, and he explores its nooks and crannies. The couch becomes almost a metaphor for Ivan Ilyich's impending death. He has a wonderful eye for detail and he's famous for allowing the physical surroundings of a person to speak about that person, and they come, certain things, porcelain figures, come to speak about the lifestyle and represent, a gesture that Tolstoy can make in a line. He can sum up the entirety of a whole household or of a whole culture, bourgeois Muscovite life at the end of the 19th century.
Yeah. And I think that, for anybody who might perhaps be slightly put off by the idea of reading a piece of 19th century Russian literature, I think the reason that why it's such a good choice is that the ideas that he's grappling with and that the character grapples with, like the meaning of life and are trying to figure out what's a a good life and what's the way to live and how do we think about spiritual matters and how do we think about material matters. These are questions now we're grappling with right now. It seems to me that our preoccupation with measuring our well-being by material things is a very contemporary kind of thing to be wrestling with, and that is a central theme in this story. So I don't think that people now would have very much difficulty relating to the questions and the issues that are raised by the story.
Ivan Ilyich is a 19th century yuppie. He knows how to shop. And yet Tolstoy was interested in simplifying, living with less. Mm. So we have magazines like Real Simple, which are actually shopping magazines. So those issues are central today. We have the slow food movement, vegetarian movements, vegan movements, and these issues are at the center of this novel.
It should be noted that Tolstoy was a vegetarian and a really interesting advocate for vegetarianism. Mm. So,
and also was someone who came from a very old and very wealthy Russian family. So he was a man who was born into a life of wealth and privilege,
and
something that
Tolstoy's,
he then turned away from later, but, you know.
Never completely.
Well, he never moved out of that big house, I guess, until right at the very end.
Yeah, there's a certain seigneurial, aristocratic air to this story. I mean, I actually don't think that that's a valid way to read it, although it certainly is a possible way to read it, that, Tolstoy despises the middle class because, I mean, you know, his family was one of the most important families and one of the oldest families. You know, he was from the very, very, very highest levels of aristocracy in Russia. And so you get that you certainly feel that to a certain extent in this novella. He despises the middle class. Although I actually don't think it's quite that simple. It's much more than just a class issue for him. But that certainly is an element of it.
We have a caller here. One, bring them into the conversation, and perhaps also I should take the moment to reintroduce our guests. Michael Denner, he is assistant professor of Russian studies. He is also editor of the Tolstoy Studies Journal at Stetson University. Harriet Muroff is a professor here in the Department of Slavic Languages and Literatures. And we're talking a little bit about The Big Read and about Tolstoy. And if you have questions, give us a call, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. And we have someone here to talk with on our line one, someone here locally. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
I wonder a little bit about Tolstoy's attitude towards differences and tolerance. And I bring this up specifically because, one, you mentioned, one of the guests mentions that Tolstoy is the second czar in 19th century Russia in terms of public opinion and influence, and also because one of your guests is the in charge of a set of series called Borderlands, having to do with Russian and Eastern European Jewish life, politics, etc. So I wondered, given Tolstoy's strong connection with the Russian Orthodox Church and with Russian aristocracy, what was his attitude towards Jews, the Jewish life in Russia, the issues having to do with the Pale, and his general tolerance of non-Russian Orthodox communities in the Russian society and in Russian politics and their rights and lack of rights thereof?
All right. Well, you want to talk about that?
Tolstoy, by the way, was excommunicated from the Russian Orthodox Church, and he was a great defender and advocate of minorities in Russia. Sholem Aleichem, for example, the great Yiddish writer, wrote Tolstoy a letter asking him to protest specific acts, anti-Jewish violence of the time, and Tolstoy and other Russian writers, including Kirilenko and Gorky, participated in a collection of essays called The Shield, which was a protest against anti-Jewish newspaper campaigns, anti-Jewish activity. Tolstoy was very different from many other leading Russian figures of his time in that regard, a great advocate for Jews and for other minorities.
Thank you.
All right. Other questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. This novella was published in 1886. Is that right?
Yes.
What was the reaction to this when it came out?
I should point out that, first of all, that this was the first artistic work that Tolstoy wrote after Anna Karenina. So we're talking about a little bit over a decade where he basically stops writing belletristic, artistic fiction. This time, this 10 years, he spends... he does a lot of things in these 10 years, probably the most important of which is that he undertakes to retranslate and harmonize the Gospels from the early extant Koine Greek originals. That's a troubled thing to say, but from the earliest extant manuscripts at the time. He basically works out what he calls true Christianity, which might be better thought of as maybe a revised Christianity, although he would insist that it was a return to a more primordial and authentic Christianity. And he takes this translation of the Gospels and develops an entire cosmological, theological, philosophical model of behavior and of political action. So he takes off 10 years to write these books, and he writes thousands and thousands of pages. This is what Tolstoy does. This is a man who has a 90-volume collection of works, each of which is about 900 to 1,000 pages. So he never had a writer's block, to say the least. So this was the first belletristic, this first artistic text that he wrote since the incredibly popular novel Anna Karenina, which was a hit then as much as it is now. And it should be noted that he and his wife had some pretty complicated relationships, but at this point the family's fortunes had taken a turn for the much worse, because Tolstoy, even though he was an aristocrat, this is the 19th century in Russia, and there were always financial pressures, and the family had come to rely on income from his literary productions, and he basically stops. He doesn't stop writing, of course, but absolutely everything he writes, and this is almost not an exaggeration, but virtually anything that he writes from 1876 on was banned by the censor in Russia and wasn't printed until 1905, much of it not printed until 1917, until the Bolsheviks come into power. He gave Death of Ivan Ilyich as a birthday present to his wife, which is, yeah, happy birthday, honey. Here's a book about death and how awful wives are to husbands. But this was a major thing, because everybody wanted the next work by Tolstoy, and he gave his wife exclusive rights to publish it. She was in the process of putting together collected works, and so the inclusion of this particular work was a major asset for her, and it turned around some family finances. Yeah. I actually don't know, maybe Harriet does, how it was received. It was published in Russia, but it had to be expurgated for the censor. I don't know. Do you know, Harriet, what the popular reception of the book was?
No.
Yeah, I don't think. It was well received, to be sure. He had other far more sensationalist works. In the 1890s, he wrote a book called The Kreutzer Sonata, which is a story about how a man murders his wife in a fit of jealous rage. Its discussion of sexuality was so frank that it was banned all over the world, which of course meant that it was
everybody wanted to read it.
And at this point, Tolstoy had given up on all of his copyright on all of his works, and he said basically, anybody can. I write it, and anybody who wants to can print it, translate it, do whatever they want with it. So he sort of went early internet, right? You know, this idea that you put it out there in the public domain, and I did some research on Kreutzer Sonata a few years ago, and I was looking through the records of publication in the United States, and the year that he writes Kreutzer Sonata, it comes out in 9 different editions by 9 different publishers in New York alone. They tried to get around the censor, and they didn't always succeed, but he was an incredibly popular writer, in addition to being, you know, this moral authority that he played.
I'm struck the more I hear about the man's life and the more I think about some of the themes that are that come up in the story, the difficult relationship between Ivan and his wife, this criticism of middle-class values, these questions of life and death, questions of God and is there any and what's the meaning of life and what's the meaning of suffering. It sounds like Tolstoy was essentially writing his own, in some ways, maybe in many ways, writing his own story. He must have been experiencing at least some of this, thinking of himself personally about a lot of this, this experience that then he gives to the character.
Tolstoy was certainly keenly aware of the autobiographical element in all of his works. He had a really very complicated relationship with his own public self. On the one hand, he loved being the center of attention and the publicity, and he was an incredibly famous man. He had paparazzi around him all the time. People would jump out of corners from around corners in buildings in Moscow and take his picture. He was hounded by film cameras as soon as they came to Russia in 1897, 1898. Journalists would bang on his door all day long, On the one hand, he loved this. He had an enormous ego. On the other hand, philosophically, he really believed in the importance of humility and anonymity and humbleness and all these things that he identified as Christian virtues. And so he had this constant stress and struggle between, you know, his love of being well-known and his philosophical and religious principles about humility and humbleness and anonymity.
But again, it's important to keep in mind, I think, what another great Russian writer, Andrei Sinyavsky, called the ABCs of literature. The hero is not the author. And Tolstoy, to be sure, like any other author, takes parts of himself and puts them in various characters, using a kind of dream logic, in any work. And Tolstoy, as John Bailey, another great scholar of Tolstoy, says, creates extreme experimental situations in which just about every variable is removed except one thing. So Kreutzer Sonata, a man murders his wife out of jealousy and is cast out. Death of Ivan Ilyich, a man is dying. Alyosha Lopat, a simple man, lives and dies in the space of three pages. Ivan Ilyich realizes too late, as John Bailey says, that Praskovya Fyodorovna, his wife, is a person. My God, he forgot. So is it just a kind of realistic depiction of the strains in a marriage, or is it a deliberate manipulation so that only when the man is about to die he realizes the woman next to him is, after all, not a monster, but a human being? And so placing too much emphasis, I'm not saying you have, but placing too much emphasis on the autobiographical dimension gets us off the hook from thinking about how the work actually operates.
And what's more, I'll follow this up with a little anecdote about Tolstoy. Tolstoy believed in the beneficial effects of hard physical manual labor, and so he did a lot of things on his own for himself. And about 8 months after he finishes Death of Ivan Ilyich, he's out plowing. Because that's what Tolstoy did. And he punctures his leg and gets a horrendous infection in his leg. He has a 106-degree fever. He almost dies. He's in tremendous pain. His leg swells up to twice its size. What's interesting is that Tolstoy and his wife had very, very stormy relations. I mean, he was a man of great passions, and so was she. They never got along as well as when she was nursing him back to health from his punctured leg. And so you see, if you read this novella, The Death of Ivan Ilyich, it's just the opposite, you know. So Tolstoy seems to think in this book that health crises drive people apart, but a few months later he finds out that, you know, his wife is best friend and his caretaker, and they experience, you know, it's always ups and downs with them, but this is a high point, is when he's dying and his wife loves him so.
We're just at our midpoint here, and for anybody who has just tuned in, let me reintroduce our subject and reintroduce the guest. We're talking about the Champaign-Urbana Big Read for 2008. Now, the Big Read is something that's happening in communities across the country for the first half of this year. It's an initiative of the National Endowment for the Arts. The idea is they're trying to encourage people to read literature and do that by creating this opportunity for people to read and discuss a single book in their community. And here in Champaign-Urbana, the book here is the novella that we've been talking about, The Death of Ivan Illich by Tolstoy. There are a number of events going on in connection with the Big Read here. One of our guests here, Michael Denner, will be giving a talk on Tolstoy and on Ivan Illich tonight at the Champaign Public Library at 7. So if you're interested, you can stop by. There are some other things. There's a dramatic performance by Champaign Central High students tomorrow, Friday. And then next week on Wednesday, the Death and the Meaning of Life Film Festival at the Virginia Theater, and a lot of other things, too. And as I said, probably the easiest thing for you to do if you have Internet access is to type into your web browser, Champaign-Urbana Big Read 2008, and you can get the schedule of events. Our guest, Michael Denner, is Assistant Professor of Russian Studies at Stetson University. He's also editor of the Tolstoy Studies Journal. And Harriet Mirov is here, too. She's professor in the Department of Slavic Languages and Literatures here at the University of Illinois. They're one of the university units that's involved in sponsoring events for the Big Read here for this year for 2008. And questions are welcome. Comments, you want to be a part of the conversation here, 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. I think one of the things that's striking about the book, I think, is how most of the characters are completely unsympathetic, except perhaps Ivan himself, and I suppose you. If you come to sympathize with him, I think it's because, you know, the human condition involves eventually death and suffering, and it's not the kind of thing that you can get away from. But so many of the people in the book around him seem to regard his death as either an opportunity for advancement, as his colleagues do, or something of an inconvenience, as a lot of his family members seem to. And there's only one person who seems to be okay, too. Maybe I'm thinking of one character in particular that seems at all interested in his suffering and in trying to do something for him, not seemingly expecting really to get anything out of it. And this is a young man, a peasant boy, who is definitely of the different class. He is not middle class. Does that tell you something, the fact that Tolstoy would put this character in and that he would be the only person who seemed to care really much about what's happening to Ivan?
I think the somewhat grandiose adulation of the quote-unquote simple people is an obsession of Russian intellectuals, especially those of aristocratic background, throughout the 19th century. Tolstoy, in all his works, has a good peasant. And in War and Peace, it's Platon Karatayev. In Anna Karenina, there's a simple peasant who's plowing a field. They always appear in work that was written after this. The whole story is about a simple peasant boy, Alyosha Gorshok, the pot. So whatever is not me, not my background, not my education, not Western-oriented, not interested in progress, it stems from the 18th century French Swiss philosopher Jean-Jacques Rousseau, sort of noble, primitive, simple, barely articulate human being who hasn't been corrupted by society and competition and trying to best one another. This complete romanticization is also found in, for example, Dostoevsky and other Russian writers of the time. And, you know, who is Gerasim? This peasant boy. Do we know anything? What's his name? It's only his first name. So what is Tolstoy up to here is a rather tricky question, I think.
Tolstoy, I've mentioned already, you know, he embraces Christian or pseudo-Christian or Tolstoyan Christian ideas of simplicity and humility. I think what's probably most important about Gerasim and what makes him different from everyone around him is that he's the only one who doesn't care about himself, and he's the only one who doesn't pursue individual happiness. Tolstoy despised individual happiness. He himself, of course, was his personal life and his theoretical life are not always so clear and simple. But Gerasim is the hero of the novel because he's the only one who puts others' welfare above his own, and who it's not so much that. I think this is the key for me. It's not so much that Gerasim knows that he's going to die, it's that Gerasim has nothing to live for, because his life is so oriented towards others and serving others. And for Tolstoy, you know, the way to escape anxiety of death, the way to escape this mortal terror that Ivan experiences is to stop caring for yourself and instead externalize all of your desire towards others. And this is what Gerasim does. This is what makes him so nonchalant in the face of death. Everybody else, Heidegger talks about the social inconvenience of death, and he actually cites the death of Ivan Ilyich as a great example of, you know, what a bother death is for other people, for the person dying too, I suppose. But Gerasim, you know, he's totally unfazed by Ivan's illness. He's totally unfazed by his own impending death, which he understands but doesn't fear because Gerasim has nothing to live for, right? He has no investment in actualizing his own happiness. And think about this, you know, this whole novel is about people who spend their every ounce of their energy, every moment of their day pursuing personal pleasure. And for Tolstoy, you know, this was antithetical to true spiritual consciousness. Tolstoy was heavily influenced by Eastern thought, in particular Taoism and Buddhism. He was already reading this Buddhist and Taoist philosophy in the 1870s, and by the 1880s and 1890s, he'd become there's a sinologist at the University of Chicago named Dirk Bodhi who wrote a book on Tolstoy's interest in the East, and Bodhi, who was, you know, one of the leading intellectuals of the 20th century, said that Tolstoy probably knew more about Chinese and Indian philosophy than anyone outside of a very small circle of professional sinologists at the end of the 19th century, people who studied China, sinologists. Mm-hmm. Tolstoy was really deeply influenced by Buddhism and Taoism, as I said, and you see, and one can make an argument that early Christianity was influenced by Buddhism as well, you see a lot of these threads coming together in this novel. It's interesting. Gerasim is sort of in a state of nirvana, although Tolstoy's version of nirvana is very different from a Buddhist sense of nirvana because Gerasim is all body. He's all action. He's all labor. Every time you see him, he's touching things and doing things, but always in the service of others. And so this is perfect spiritual image that Tolstoy offers. It's not an image that maybe contemporary 21st century Americans would find particularly attractive. And I can say not very many people probably in the history of mankind would find it attractive, but this is Tolstoy's. I mean, when you see Gerasim, what you're seeing is Tolstoy's Buddha.
Ah, that's interesting. You know, for most of us who are going to be reading this, we're going to read it in translation. And I'm sure that probably for people who can read Russian, then maybe one of the things they will think about is what's a good translation? What really brings to you the real feeling of the Russian version, and maybe that's not possible. You know, maybe it's difficult to do that. And I'm not asking for a particular, you know, for you to tell me who you think is good. I guess though, what I'm interested in is do you think there are particular qualities about Russian, about what you can do with the language, about how in Russian you say things, as compared to how you say things in other languages that are special, that you think are wonderful, and that it's possible to try and get across in a translation.
Let me just say at the outset that we're having a whole discussion of this issue on April 14th in the U of I bookstore at 4:00, The Journey of Translation. Yes, there's wonderful things you can do in a case-inflected language like Russian. Case-inflected means that in order to show the relationship between words, you add endings. So there are six of them in Russian, which means you can play around with word order in ways that you can't in English as easily. And that creates enormous richness, and it creates enormous difficulty as well. You also have grammatical gender in Russian. Every noun has a gender unrelated to some anthropomorphic notion that a table is masculine.
Although that, women are feminine and men are masculine, right. So there is ultimate right. gender awareness, but not much.
So fork is feminine, but table is masculine. It's
and
not.
So who, yeah.
Right.
This is important in this novel.
It's important in this novel because at a certain point, Ivan Ilyich becomes terribly afraid of something that in the English translation is it. It. His death and his fear of his death and his pain pursue him. And it makes him, Ivan Ilyich, look at it. And he is terrified of looking at it. Now, in Russian, the particular word death and pain happen to be grammatically feminine. So in Russian, it's she pursues him and she wants him. We understand that sometimes she just means it, but here grammatical gender and a kind of mythologized fear of this dreadful feminine figure like the Medusa head, like the Gorgon, Tolstoy is able to pick up on all those associations of a dread-destroying feminine force by using words in Russian that are grammatically feminine so that he can substitute the pronoun she. And so the horror of death is almost like from a Gothic horror novel. It's almost like this feminine figure that's pursuing Ivan Ilyich, that won't let him hide, that wants him, look at me, look at me. Mm-hmm. And he suffers unspeakable terrors when he looks at, in English translation, it. In Russian, it slash her, which adds tremendous power. So that would be one concrete example where grammar makes a difference.
Mm-hmm. I'll give you another example. Probably, maybe the most famous line. There are a number of really famous lines in this novel, but the one that starts off, I think it's the second chapter, where we shift from. Where we shift from the social inconvenience of Ivan Ilyich's death at the wake and the funeral to how it is that Ivan dies, and that line, I think it's the first line of the second chapter, runs: the past history of Ivan Ilyich's life was the most ordinary, the most simple, and the most awful. Now, a lot of translations. That's the clean translation from Russian, very, very clear. A lot of translations add "and therefore the most awful," which is an addition that, for example, the Mauds, famous translators of Tolstoy, made. It's actually a correct translation. I don't criticize it, but putting that "therefore," right? So it was Ivan's life was simple, ordinary, and therefore awful. They add the word "therefore," but I'm actually interested in the word. He says "самое ужасное," the most, and then this word "ужасный." It's an interesting word because it's very difficult to translate it into English. Awful doesn't really cut it because Tolstoy is playing off of the word "ужас" there, which means horror or dread. And so it's not just that his life was awful, that is to say, distasteful, but it was also full of dread. And I think that's an important point in this novel because the novel is so much about Ivan's fear of death and how much it terrifies him, as Harriet's already pointed out. And that gets lost. And so actually I think a guy named Tony Briggs, who translated a Death of Ivan Ilyich for Penguin Classics, but it's only out in England, I think gets it as close as it can get, which is the previous story of Ivan Ilyich's life was the most simple, the most ordinary, and the most dreadful, full of dread, and also awful, dreadful in the sense of distasteful or wrong.
So. Yeah, that's very interesting. I guess my feeling sitting down to read it is that what I found was, and I think probably when you read literature of the 19th century, you have to adjust yourself to a different pace. And you've got to, you have to take your time with it. Give it a little time, because he writes sometimes very long sentences. So I think of it as something you want to stroll through. And every once in a while you're going to pause and you're going to admire the scenery at that point, and then you're going to go on. And I think that if you take it in little bits like that, and almost look at long sentences as being a collection of vignettes or places to stop. Mm-hmm. To me, that's the way to do it. And when you do it like that, when you just sort of slow down and settle into it, I found myself enjoying it very much, because the turns of phrase, again, obviously I'm reading an English translation, but the turns of phrase, particularly the sometimes rather dark humor in it, I enjoyed that very much. But it's a different – people don't write like that anymore. So I think you have to give yourself over to a very different rhythm and pace.
There's always a great deal of taste and subjectivity in evaluating any writer's style. And I'm sure that what I'm going to say many people would disagree with. But in many respects, Tolstoy was an awful writer. I mean, he was an incredibly powerful writer. With Tolstoy, it's very, very common for him to, for example, use the same word over and over again in a sentence, for his sentences to be quite blunt and inelegant. These were conscious choices for Tolstoy. He was a very effective writer. He wasn't an elegant writer. He could be if he wanted to. But I find that when I read English translations of Tolstoy, they tend to, I think, improperly take the many rough edges off of Tolstoy, rough edges that are there intentionally, not because Tolstoy couldn't write, but because this is the way that he chose to express a certain idea. They'll also clean up some of his syntax and make his sentences. You say his sentences are long. You should read the Russian, which has relative clauses that allow you to really spin paragraph-long sentences. There's this game in Russia that was very popular in the 70s and 80s. I don't know if it is any longer. Almost a national obsession, where they would get up and they would read long passages in Russian. And spelling is kind of an interesting thing in Russian, and punctuation and grammatical endings. And it was like a contest. You know, somebody would get up and they would read a long passage, and you would try to transcribe this. It was a competition to see who could get it the most right. They almost always chose Tolstoy, because Tolstoy has such long and elegant, or sometimes awkward, you know, it's very easy to go from elegant to awkward, syntactical structures in his sentences. And he really plumbs the richness of Russian grammatical cases, like Harriet was talking about. And so almost always they chose Tolstoy as the most difficult writer to transcribe. Mm.
I really like what you said about slowing down and looking at one sentence as containing multiple vignettes. I mean, that's the way one has to read poetry, right? You can't read poetry to see what's going to happen next. And in this novel, you certainly know what's going to happen. He tells you in the title. So you have to read it differently, and it's very difficult to do so. And I can just add autobiographically that reading this was the first book I read in Russian. It took me hours to get through a single paragraph, and I would always lose what was the subject of the sentence. It's very difficult. It's very condensed. So your approach to it, I think, is just absolutely right.
Hmm. It's interesting the way that it's structured, because, as you say, you know right up front the way the story ends. The man dies. That's the title of the story. But he chooses to begin it in this way that he's looking at. It takes a while before he gets to the point where he actually introduces you to the character. He's looking at other people who are reacting to this event. You know, the first thing is it opens up and it's in the – he was a magistrate, and it opens up at the courts, and his former colleagues are just sitting around, and it's a break, and they're talking about cases and they're talking shop. And that's when one of them is sitting there reading the newspaper, and he says, "Hey, guys, listen to this. Ivan Ilyich died." And their immediate reaction, somebody's immediate reaction is, or maybe it's the narrator's describing their immediate reaction as something like, well, better him than me. And then they start thinking of, oh, there's going to be a job opening. And then one of them, who apparently was, you know, considered himself to be a close enough friend to want to go pay a call on the widow, goes over to the house for the wake. And then we're introduced to the grieving widow, whose main concern seems to be Ivan's pension. And the rest of his family, and you get this feeling that everybody thinks, well, this is just a big pain, and we have to kind of go through this for the social convention. We have to do this because it's polite, because it's the thing to do. But then we want to kind of get on with life. And having read that, I think that what he encourages the reader to ask is, well, this poor guy, is there no one who mourns this man? Does anybody care that he's dead?
Would Ivan have mourned anyone's passing would be really the question that I ask.
Well, would it have been just the same if it was one of the other guys?
Of course.
And that really is the issue. I mean, he no doubt would have been no better. And he
would have worried about whether or not they had the necessary hands to play a game of Vint.
Exactly. You know, he'd be thinking, well, as this one man does, what he really would like to do is be playing cards with his buddies. But he's got to go over. He feels it's his responsibility to go and pay a call, and then gets stuck having to sit there through a service for the man, the dead man who's lying there, and no doubt he's just thinking about, now how quickly is it? How can we get through this? I got to get through this, and then I want to get out of here because we can still salvage this evening. I still have time to go play a few hands of bridge.
Let's not let death get in the way of our good time.
Exactly. Well, and that is, again, the thing, one of these things that runs all the way through is that, you know, how are you going to think about this? And do you even, in fact, want to think about the fact that that could be you in, you know, lying in the coffin? And I think that it's interesting how then Tolstoy, right up front, you know, as we say, we know where it goes, but it draws you in and you start thinking, well, who was this person? What brought him to this point, and why does it seem that nobody cares? And I think that's a great way to hook you into a story where you might say, well, I know where this is going. I know how this is going to end. You put it in the title. But I think that he does a nice job right there at the beginning of catching you. And then you want to say, well, who was this person? You know, what happened here exactly? Why does nobody care?
Tolstoy was a master at artistic devices, at these really clever ideas that played with the reader's expectations. You know, I mean, he famously told a whole story from the point of view of a horse. And then this is a classic in sort of tricks of literature, which is to completely deflate the narrative-driven sort of reading that most of us do—the reading for the plot, where we want to find out what happens next—and instead, I think Harriet's right. I mean, when you already know the end of the story, you stop reading it like a story and you read it more like poetry. And it's a great device that Tolstoy uses here. We all know how this is going to end, and so it's not so much on the events, but instead on the meaning of the death and the beauty of the prose. Mm-hmm.
So, can you talk a little bit about how I asked a little bit earlier about what the reaction of people was at the time that the story became available? It seems that this is one also that a lot of people over time, writers in particular, have pointed to as being a very important work, not just of Tolstoy's, but in all of Russian literature. I think Nabokov said something like he thought that it was the greatest story to come out of Russia ever, or maybe he was talking specifically about Tolstoy. But that is it. Something that it seems to be something that a lot of other writers and people who have studied literature have really pointed to and admire and said this is a very important piece of writing.
You know, I mean, Tolstoy is a writer's writer. You know, if you go to any of these MFA programs in creative writing, there's a cult of Tolstoy always. Tolstoy is always held forth as, you know, the place where you can get all of the tools that you need to make yourself into an author. I mean, I think it's absolutely right. You know, I mean, it helps, you know, if you can have 60 years of, you know, basically uninterrupted creative activity, you get pretty good. Tolstoy was, you know, an incredibly well-read, incredibly well-educated guy and very sensitive to artistic movements and styles, and he incorporated them. You know, the early Tolstoy is just this absolute brilliant romantic, and then, you know, you have him write an epic with War and Peace, and then you have this sort of dramatic tragedy with Anna Karenina. He did it all, and you know, interestingly enough, one of these weird Tolstoy facts, which I have an innumerable quantity of, you know, the best-selling work of Tolstoy's during his own lifetime was actually an ABC, a primer for school children to learn how to read. He made more money from it, and more copies of it were sold than all of his other works. And so he also wrote stories that were perfect for children learning to read. So that, you know, this goes from, you know, writing a 1,000-page novel, a third of which is in French, to writing, you know, one-page stories for children.
I think that one of the most influential works on other writers was, in fact, War and Peace. I mean, during the Soviet time, everybody wrote a World War II novel that was an attempt to rewrite War and Peace, that great epic panoramic, all of Russia, the enemy, the families, the daily life, the war scene. So that is possibly kind of an unfortunate tendency.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're at the point where we're going to have to finish here. One thing I thought I would ask for people, you know, like me, who this is their first Tolstoy, and then now they're thinking, well, okay, this guy does pretty good, and I would like to read something else. The big books are Anna Karenina and War and Peace. Would you suggest people, you know, go directly to War and Peace, or would you stop, go somewhere, try something else intermediate before you try that?
I mean, War and Peace and Anna Karenina are eminently approachable, albeit slowly read novels. But I actually would think that after reading Death of Ivan Ilyich, it might be interesting for somebody to go back and read something from the very earliest period. Tolstoy wrote a series of books about childhood, boyhood, and adolescence. And the first of those, Childhood, it created a complete storm on the Russian literary scene. And it's an absolutely brilliant, very short novella about the same length as Death of Ivan Ilyich. Of course, it has death and tragedy in it too. But by and large, it's a much more upbeat and happier story. And it's absolutely brilliantly told and beautiful story. I think a lot of people would enjoy that book. It's just called Childhood by Tolstoy.
Right. Well, if people would like to hear more about Tolstoy and Ivan Ilyich, you can hear Michael Denner talk tonight at 7 o'clock at the Champaign Public Library. Other events in connection with the Big Read you can find out by going to the website. Just put Champaign-Urbana Big Read 2008 in your browser, and you can find those. Michael Denner is Assistant Professor of Russian Studies, Editor of the Tolstoy Studies Journal at Stetson University, and Harriet Murov is Professor of Slavic Languages and Literatures here at the University of Illinois. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.